I'm actually here on holiday. I grew up in Cape Town and I left 18 years ago. And every now and then I come back to visit friends. And at the moment my sister's living in Scarborough. So I end up in Scarborough. And of course one of the first things I do is check like the internet connection to see if I can find my mail and stuff like that. And she said she had wireless, and then I was impressed. I mean, I think she got some guy to do it for her, but then it wasn't just simply wireless, it was a mesh network. So this really like made me so happy. I hadn't even been for a beach walk yet, nothing. I was really completely at home because it was this mesh network set up by this guy with using Freifunk software, which is this firmware developed by a group in Berlin, actually, who I kind of vaguely know and stuff. So I was so happy. I was completely in my element. And so, I emailed him, and, well, we got talking. I visited him. We've been wandering around Scarborough and stuff. And then he suggested, you know, why don't you come to the Cape Linux Users Group or the Geek Dinner and just tell a bit about yourself. So the thing I'm going to talk about this afternoon is actually just really my enthusiasm for open source and how it got me to do like a couple of projects that I've been working on for the last few years. I don't think it'll be such a long talk, but what I'm really interested in actually is to hear all your stories, because that's what I really enjoyed about talking, that's why I enjoyed talking to David Carman so much, because to hear like what he's been up to and what he's doing in South Africa at the moment and stuff. I just have to say that another cool story that I have is that last week I set up a wireless network at someone's house. And before I knew it, she said that this colleague of hers, partner is also in IT. He's behind the SkyRove initiative. I don't know if you all know SkyRove, which is actually also kind of a community mesh network, except a commercial community mesh network in Cape Town. So this was just like the second happy coincidence for me on this holiday, which is actually supposed to be a holiday and not to like I was supposed to try and get away from computers and stuff. So, but I just enjoyed so much that I end up coming across it anyways. So I studied here. I spent most of my time running around doing all sorts of other stuff, not really studying, back in, I think it was about 88, 89. And I wasn't so happy here, so I left and I moved to Holland. I've been based in Rotterdam and Amsterdam for the last almost two decades. And there I studied nursing, so I'm actually a qualified nurse, and that's what I was doing in Amsterdam, working for the infectious diseases department, kind of enjoying my travel clinic position because it meant giving people lots of wonderful information about traveling in the whole world and vaccinations. And for South Africa, you hardly don't need anything. So it's nice to promote South Africa. You don't need injections and, well. And but I was really gripped by like this, the whole, you know, movement towards the internet and how computers were becoming so important and stuff. And I was so fascinated by it, but I couldn't seem to get to know enough about it just by reading magazines and whatever. So I thought like the only way to really get into it would be actually to work in it, to immerse myself completely in it. And so I quit my nursing job, and that was in 2000, and started just a simple tech support position, actually, you know, through the phone, and did that for a while, and then ended up doing kind of like desktop support for a little company in Holland. I did that for quite a long time, and I really enjoyed it, actually. It was a small factory that they built paint shakers and were quite good at it, but the factory had everything in it. It had an R&D department, it had, well, the factory floor with the workers, and had a sales department, and had the managers, and I would run around, actually do a bit of everything. I, you know, install computers or printers, you know, if people were moving workspaces, I, you know, managed to patch the telephones in the server room, and I really enjoyed it. I was actually quite happy with it. The only thing I wasn't so happy with was that it was all Microsoft Windows based, and in my free time I was connecting with this other project, the OSCE, and I was, you know, they gave me the chance to do an MCSE, and I did two, but I was actually very irritated by the way they taught the material, and let me just start off with the OSCE, because when I started the help desk job, I thought, you know, what I really need to do actually is get to know a little more about computers. And I came across this this project, ASCII. And it had started in 1999, so it was pretty new actually then in Amsterdam. It came out of the squatting scene. I don't know if you are familiar with squatting in Holland, but it's been around for, I think, since the 60s, 70s. It's actually been legalized that if a building has been left vacant for longer than a year, people do have a right to squat it and use it. If the owner isn't doing anything with it, then people are allowed to inhabit it and use it for something until the owner has decided they're going to use it for something else, and then the people that have squatted the place have to get out. So there were a bunch of squatters who happened to be into computers as well, and they decided to get together in 1999 and squat a building and open it up to the public as a free internet cafe, which at the time was actually quite revolutionary because there were only a few internet cafes around and they were quite expensive. And they did it all with recycled hardware, so hardware off the streets or hardware that they'd been given as donations. And they put free software on it, so they put Linux on it. And to pay for the ADSL line, they ran a bar, a cafe. They sold coffee, beer, etc., and that's how they managed to pay for the connection. So that was really fascinating. So I wandered into that. I was really impressed with it. And I started hanging out there a bit. At that point, I got to know some of the girls hanging out there. I'd just like to tell you a little bit more about the ASCII, because not only did they hand out like free internet, but they also gave email accounts, which I also think is very interesting, because even today it's difficult to find a really neutral email account. I mean, either you subscribe to Hotmail, MSN, or even a Gmail account is suspect these days because Google just knows too much about you, and there's no, I mean, you can get an email account through your ISP, but what if you want to change ISPs next year? Or you can get an email account through your school, but what happens, when you finish studying? Or you get an email account through your business, but that the admins are watching it, and these days businesses, they all have these rules and stuff, what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. So the other thing that this collective did is they handed out email accounts, which I thought was really cool, and I still think it's a cool initiative. And then they provided workshops and tech support for activist collectives in Amsterdam. They did that for about 6 years. They also started a wireless initiative. But that has also kind of actually petered out into nothing, because in Amsterdam everybody has internet at home and everybody has a wireless router in their home, so it's just like no one really needs it. And they had this kind of a crisis. Does think like what are they supposed to do with their lives, because they don't have to offer internet anymore. And the tech workshops, they realized that there was just no way you were going to teach the masses, because the masses were just like so way behind, and it wasn't working. It just, and they kind of decided that, okay, they would be willing to offer tech support, but they'd had enough of giving workshops. And unfortunately, they decided just to completely, stop existing. The guys and girls around, they still do their things. They're still part of a lot of really interesting initiatives in Amsterdam. So if you ever need tech support or want to meet some cool geeks there, they're around. So that's, and we always bump into each other, and at the hackers conferences and stuff, they always have their own tent and stuff. So this is a pretty important group, and I don't know if you know people like Rob Gromgrijp, who started the first ISP in Holland, and he does like the Hackers at Large and What the Hack, those hack camps that happen every 4 years in Holland. They also happen every 4 years in Germany, so it's like every 2 years there's a hack camp somewhere in that area, which is quite fun to go to in the summer vacation. Anyway, so that is still actually a very interesting group of people that still do cutting edge work, I think, and I'm still kind of in touch with all of them, and carry on doing good stuff with them. Okay, so anyways, what happened was that There were a bunch of girls in Oski, and some of them had like partners who were with the geeks working there, and some of them weren't like me. And we realized that we were really struggling to learn new stuff. And whenever we asked one of the guys, like, you know, how does this work? How does that work? We get this like fountain, this waterfall of jargon over us, and like really hectic explanations that we couldn't follow at all. It was like just way above us and too fast and everything, and we were just feeling like a bit lost in it all. So we decided to like get together and, you know, hang out together and learn a bit together. It's like, you know, when I was at school, we had a book club, and, you know, you'd each read a book and then you'd tell each other about the book, and that's kind of what we decided to do, was to meet and cook, and then we, you know, we'd take turns and trying to figure something out, and then we'd teach each other and stuff. So that's how the gender changes actually started. But also, I guess you understand the name or not, because we have had people who've been like a bit worried about the term, what it exactly means, but generally when you come across people from the tech world, they normally know what you're talking about. But I don't have to explain that. Anyways, what started as a really like fun thing, and we decided we wanted one night a week, it would be the girls' night, okay? And we tidy everything up and we put flowers in, and, you know, and with no smoking and no dogs allowed. And because of course this hack lab was pretty dark and dingy, it was nice. And then we started not only meeting by ourselves, but also decided to try and give workshops. And one of the first workshops we gave is still actually the most popular one, is the hardware course. And it's a nice way to introduce people into computing if they really have absolutely no background. It's to give them an old computer and a screwdriver, and then you just spend a few hours taking it all apart and putting it back together again. And I've done this all over the place. I've really given quite a few of these workshops the last few years, and it's still, no matter what, it's still fun. I mean, it's still like this, everybody goes, ooh, when they open the hard disk and they see this mirror. Honestly, you start recording just before they've opened it. Every time you get the same reaction. They love this round, like really shiny mirror of the hard disk. And it's just really, really cool. But the other reason, of course, why we give the hardware workshop is because if you want to carry on giving computer workshops, like, for example, an introduction to Linux or, you know, building a website or whatever, you really need to be able to, you must be able to visualize the computer, because, you know, software takes up space, it uses memory, etc. And only once you've done this hardware course can you carry on, you know, teaching more courses. So that's kind of how we set up this pattern, that every year we do this hardware course and a Linux course and a website course, and then kind of ended with a kind of a privacy and security course, because we're all still very like worried about the way the net is going. So anyways, we were giving these courses in Amsterdam, and then at some point we got invited to quite a few places, into Germany, and we then got invited to this one place in Croatia, Pula, to give what we were doing in Amsterdam. And we went on the road, we saved some money, and we went in a big bus, and we spent a long weekend in Pula, and we did this whole thing there in a long weekend, and we decided to give it a name, and the name we gave it was /ETC, because we wanted to have something to do with Linux, and I don't know, we made this term that, and this kind of, it really does describe like the bunch of women that we are, because a lot of us are also expats in Amsterdam. It's quite interesting that there's people from Sweden and from the UK and the US, etc. So we were, to start off, we were pretty eclectic, and also we like to think of things like just beyond like the latest specs and stuff. So it just seemed to us a really nice description of what we were doing. And we've given this festival eight times now since 2004. And we just had one in June, and every year it's a week almost of workshops, and just people hanging out and networking. You know, that's why you go to conferences, is to meet new people, get new ideas, learn some stuff, etc. So it's and next year, this year it was in Amsterdam. Next year we'll probably be doing it in Istanbul. So it's going strong, and it's really good fun. At the same time, because we were hosting these projects, we decided we really needed our own server. The guys at USCI had been hosting all our projects, and they were really supportive, and they're still supportive, and we're still their biggest fan and everything. But we, at some point, we decided, as good do-it-yourself kind of people, we wanted to be able to host our own stuff. So we set up a server, we got some funding, and we got a server running, and every now and then we meet on IRC to do some admin stuff, to teach new people some stuff, and we host a couple of projects on that. And we set up a foundation just because we needed to, because we were trying to get some funds for the different projects. Okay, just something completely different. I've been working for quite a while at this company as like a kind of a desktop support person, and then I was really fed up, and I met these two guys that do KDE development. And they were looking for someone for the team to kind of help promote this project they were trying to get started. So I joined that project, and that's what I'm still working for. It's at the Radboud University in Nijmegen. It's basically to promote open source and programming in high schools. I don't know how it is in South Africa, but in Holland, the universities are actually in a bit of a crisis because every year less young people, less high school graduates want to study information science. It's just, I don't know what it, about computer science, it's not interesting, I don't know, but there seems to be like this gradual decline, and of course, Holland wants to promote itself as an information country. It wants to be able to provide services because it doesn't have much else, it doesn't have resources, it's not a big country, so it's always been a trading and a service-oriented country. So the university decided they needed to start something to kind of get young people enthusiastic about computer science programming and open source. And then that's what CodeYard is. And we just provide the infrastructure for teachers and for students to start a programming project. So we have MySQL running, web server running, Subversion. We've even got Git running now. And we have an IRC channel where they meet. And we organize monthly community days at the university, organize some speakers from universities or businesses, and organize a lunch and cover their transport costs by train back and forth. And that seems to have gotten quite a lively and enthusiastic group of young people together. It is very small, however. It's not this huge movement. And not only is computer science pretty small in the high schools, but then for the computer science kind of like classes, the number of people that are interested in open source is even smaller. So it's small, but it's the guys are mostly boys as well. They're incredibly motivated, and that's really good fun. And then Capgemini has been sponsoring it every year, and obviously the kind of the competition element here, you know, kind of gets young people interested to join up, and you know, there's this chance of that winning a bit of money and a bit of fame. Okay. Anyways. Those are actually the other thing I do is the Girl Week Dinner. That started this year in Amsterdam. I'm doing that with Melanie Rebeck. She's an RFID expert in Holland. She's actually a computer science professor at the University of Amsterdam. So we were talking at some point and thought that this initiative that actually started in the UK would be a nice addition to the Dutch. To the Dutch business world for women in IT to network, to just in their small way promote computer science or ICT and also to see if we could attract more young women, girls into the sector, because that is another big problem and everybody's discussing it and everybody's trying to find some kind of solution or start some kind of project to attract more girls into IT. So we do that four times a year, and it's kind of, I guess, like the Geek Dinner. Yeah, I'll see the Geek Dinner on Thursday. I'm sure it's pretty much the same, except that this is mostly women getting together. Men are welcome, but it's mostly women's kind of a thing. My last four slides before like the discussion, because what I'd really like to know is like what you guys are involved in here in Cape Town. My last four slides is like a bit of a kind of an experiment I did at the last ETC, was to Because what happens every year at the ETC is there seems people don't seem to really discuss why open source is so important enough. And I think open source is really important. I wanted to kind of like stimulate some discussion. So what I did, you all know the four freedoms of free software, hey, of open source. There's these four freedoms that, what's his name, Richard Stallman thought up. So what I did is I took those four freedoms and I kind of translated, so, okay, how's open source feminist? So kind of comparing those four freedoms, saying, well, that fits perfectly into feminism. And that's why women and all feminists, male feminists too, can completely embrace open source, and this is the movement for you. Okay, so the next two slides are actually just those four points, and I'd be curious to know. Oh wait, sorry. I'll first do the full slide. What do you think of it? So the freedom to run the program for any purpose. Well, I'm kind of like into like doing it myself and. You know, like rebelling against my father figure and the government and experts in computers and stuff like that. So I thought that fitted quite well into this first freedom. And then the second one, to study and modify the program. Well, obviously, you know, participate in all aspects of the program, of the software, of the hardware. The freedom to copy the program. Well, this woman's thing about sharing recipes and, you know, like how the peace movement has always been really like a strong part of the feminist movement. I think what I really like about the open source movement is that, well, I'm into the ideological like aspects of the open source movement, so actually I should say free software movement and not so much into the business side of it. Well, the last one, the freedom to improve the program. I think feminists have improved the program to a certain degree, maybe not completely and not always completely correctly, but I think they've done quite a good stuff. So this was my play on the four open source principles. The other thing that people also always ask us is, how do you fund these projects? Well, every now and then we try and get some real funding, but generally we prefer to just do it ourselves, so it's run on volunteer work, on some donations. I like to have a job on the side just to pay the rent and have time left over to do the stuff I want to do. What I like about the open source movement is that it's, because a lot of people are fairly well off, or they can do like a day of the week that their boss allows them to do a day of the week on some cool community project or open source project. I enjoy that part of it, of the open source movement, that's so self-sufficient. So I actually would like to do that as well with the other projects that I do. Unfortunately, it's not always possible because a lot of the women that I work with are either unemployed or single mothers or studying or seem to be in this really precarious situation, which is sometimes a bit tiring, and I get to, yeah. I just wish people just, you know, you have to get your principle, you have to get your certain things you have to get down first, and before you like jump into some exciting movement, you should get your life together. But so the funding thing, we have had some funding from HIVO, some organizations in Holland, some EU support, Global Fund for Women and stuff, but it's always been really small amounts, and generally we've actually just done it ourselves, and actually I'm quite proud of that we do that every year. We keep on doing it with a really small budget, and people finance their own ways to the Eclectic Tech Carnival, or they give the workshops in their free time, and I think that's a really good aspect of running any kind of project. Okay, I had a slide about why women only, because the workshops we always do for women only, and there has been a lot of discussion about that in the past with people, because they find that it's not, how do you say, it's discrimination to exclude it, to close it to men. Whenever we give the workshops, we always ask at the end, so how did you feel about the fact that it was for women only? And actually the women generally, I can't even say generally, I have to say always say that they've really enjoyed it being that way. So it just seems to be something that there is a market for. I mean, I think there's a market for all sorts of different kinds of workshops, so I'm not saying all workshops in the future should only be women only. I think there are some things to be said about women only spaces and workshops, and especially when you in education or in kind of in the tech world. I think there should be a space for that. I also think, like, for example, arguments like girls that have gone to girls-only schools. There seem to be more women coming out of that who are interested in math, science, and tech kind of careers. But that's open to debate. Perhaps it's something we could discuss later. I'm not sure if you're really that interested in it, but there are a lot of people who are busy with these kind of things in Holland because it just is there too few women in IT, and that seems to be a problem. Anyway, so I think that was it really for me for tonight, and I was thinking perhaps from my story, these are the kind of questions that I can imagine that we could discuss if you want, but otherwise we can go have supper. I don't know, whatever you guys all want. Yeah. But I still think they're a minority, or not, of the business analysts that you know. Well, I still think there's probably less business women, female business analysts than male business analysts, or not? Do you think there's more? Okay. Sure.
And then the other interesting thing I noticed is that all the women who are IT programmers, they're programmers and they come to a certain level of competency and they're very critical of each other. They only get to a level of guru status. And they kind of like a plateau, and then that is as far as the interest goes. They don't really become grand masters and things like that. Mm-hmm. And
I'm not really an expert in why women are not as interested in IT as men are. I mean, all I know is that I'm very interested in it, and I'm not a developer. I didn't study computer science, and I'll never get very high with it. I'll always actually stay in either in educating people or promoting it or documenting it or something like that. And there's a lot of women who do that in open source and other IT projects, I guess, as well. That's just something that other people say, that the women that are involved are normally more involved in those aspects. But I did read a book called collected kind of stories of geek women called She's Such a Geek. And a few interesting things that came out of it. One of them was that the girls that have been encouraged by their dads normally have had a far better chance of enjoying it and getting into some kind of IT business. So it seems like, there's more than enough dads and guys out there encouraging girls, but it seems like there's still too few. I mean, it seems like there's still too many teachers and parents who think that girls, you know, that if they're interested in math or science, well, it's not really like girl stuff. You could go into healthcare or whatever. Exactly. So that's the one thing. And the other thing that is also what a lot of women seem to say is that the culture of like businesses or open source projects where culture still seems to be just, you know, not their thing. They still don't seem to feel really at home in it and are very happy with it. And yeah, I don't know whether that's something that women should actually take upon themselves to, well, you know, to change the culture, because that's what I feel quite often. I get a bit frustrated with my female friends that they seem to give up too quickly. And you know, I think if you want to learn something new, you should really put a lot of time and effort into it. You know, all these friends of mine, they're all vegetarians, and you know, they do all sorts of other really politically correct things, and they spend quite a lot of time, you know, changing their lifestyle into learning how to cook and shop like organically or whatever. So why don't they put some effort and energy into learn how to use open source software? I think the onus is for a big part on the women themselves, but I think also like the IT companies and open source world and the men in it, they should also perhaps empathize a little more and think, you know, in what way could we make the culture of our groups like slightly more comfortable for women to hang out in, and that might mean childcare support or I don't know, just other hours, or I don't know, you know, then you'd have to start reading the academic research and stuff and the books written around why there's less women in IT than men. Yeah. Yeah. You could do with the job, two people. Do you want to say something, Saul? Put your hand up.
I work in an IT company. I'm a woman with a humanities background.
Yeah.
And it's a daily struggle.
Yeah.
But I want to respond to something you said. A number of our very basic programmers and sort of architects were women. It was cyber, not junior, and ended up forming business as a strong three or four of them. And I think that's.
A quick point. I think it's a cultural thing. It's an English thing. When I was about 20 years ago, I worked for a chip vendor, and I went to Venezuela to do a training course for our programming language and various other things. And the classroom that I went into, without any effort at all, it was actually, I counted it, there were more women than men. And it was a thoroughly programming, computers, it was with no effort to try and bring in women or anything like that. They were Hispanic and they were happy to be there.
Mm.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
And then the first programmers, which I think it was during the Second World War, early days, they were all women, because it was seen as very menial.
Yeah, that's the status.
So women just made their programs on their pen cards. And then as computers got bigger, programmers got like kind of cool, and they did all this stuff, so men were like, okay, I'll take that.
I also feel that the status of IT job is really inflated. I also feel that what people are earning is inflated. And I think we're seeing that as well in Europe because a lot of companies are outsourcing now. So, that, I mean, that's obviously a sign that it's slightly inflated, I think, because otherwise they wouldn't be looking for people who could do exactly the same work for a lot less. I think once maybe the status of the work decreases to being less like really important and whatever, that, yeah, perhaps there would be more women. I mean, I don't know how it was in Venezuela, if that was that why there were women working in it, because that was like just not interesting for guys to be, for men to be into. I'm not sure. Yeah. Sorry.
I think the biggest barrier to women being interested is exposure from a young age. It's exposure in the Actually, when I met physicists, and then the people I met were exposed to computer science, engineering, and biology, but I wish I had had exposure at a young age, because that's one of the biggest differences between myself and my male workers, is that they've had that.
Do you guys want to comment on what she's saying? Because Stefano is here. Can you wait? Oh, yeah.
Girls, 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 girls
Stefano had his hand up long ago, so
I wanted to say something related to what I was saying earlier than else. I mean, considering what Jonathan and Tabby were saying, you can really see that in the computer science department here, that half the staff are female and maybe 10% of the business class as well.
Okay.
So from the a couple of years ago, women were dominating the field, and now what was happening?
All the culture at the universities is better for women to work in than in the business world.
Yeah.
But
I mean, also that this is the people studying computer science, how many of them are women? It comes down to that before it comes to business studies. Also, I wanted to ask if you wanted to show the website.
I'm sure you guys can find the websites later if you want. I mean, it's just, they're just our little placeholders on the net. There's some photos and a little more background information and just, yeah. I'll mail Jonathan it and then you get it from all. Sure. Just the one guy at the back, sorry. It is. It's incredibly complex. What I just want to say is that what I've noticed is that a lot of the projects that are initiated to try and attract more women or girls into IT seem to start at like high school level or otherwise university to try and get more into businesses. And what none of them do, and that's what I think what we do as a little fringe group actually, but is to target like the older women actually, or the mothers, or the unemployed women, like women who will never get the chance again, like to relive their school year or university years, or get some fancy position in some business company, but who I think is really important that they are more at home with tech stuff, because they're the ones eventually who are flooding their kids, because their kids see them day and night. And if your mom is like really like into IT or very very good at fixing the vacuum cleaner or whatever, the car even, then I think that that has a very positive influence. But this kind of project, that people don't see the return on investment, you know. I think that also that the world has kind of given up on the elder generations and perhaps even, you know, I'm almost 40 and stuff like, you know, us types, because I just see all this attention to the younger people, and I just think it's such a shame, because I don't think actually it's going to work. I mean, I also see it in, if you look at Africa, for example, okay, Africa's running behind in quite a few things, and I don't know, I don't know what we're supposed to do to try and get people's levels of just basic education further than it is at the moment. Actually, what I don't even think about trying to get my friends to get into programming, but I do think about trying to get them to see how interesting it is, and to see exactly what you were saying. Where is information science going? You know, like when kids grow up, they can imagine if they were to study engineering and they were going to go do, like, I don't know, mechanical engineering, they can imagine what a car is going to look like in 10 years' time. You know, like really, like fancy. You can. Think up a whole range of things that the way the car is going to change within 10 years. But people find it really difficult to try and imagine how the internet's going to look in 10 years' time, or how a computer's going to look in 10 years' time, you know? So what I'm trying to do is get people to like not think it's boring or difficult or whatever, and just to want to go out and buy a gadget, or want to go to the shop and get into a discussion with a guy about, like, what kind of hard disk should I buy, you know? Is it better to go for a fast one or a big one, or, you know, whatever. Anyway, so, yeah, that, obviously when you're talking about women in IT, there's these levels. There's the gurus, there's the ones that are, you know, top business analysts, or, you know, architects or developers or whatever, and then you have, like, you know, the women who are in desktop support, or you know, just the middle kind of levels, and then you have, like, everyday people just trying to get their basic skills up to scratch. I mean, my sister, really, to get her to figure out how to Skype with me or to anything, it's just, it's a mission, really. It's really sad. Closed. Yeah. And experts only.
And so something that started off as an incredible tool, in my opinion, I'm a Christian myself, but in my opinion, it's the perfect Christian thing, free software, because it basically does not hold. It's basically there to make people free, not to turn to time and not be changed.
That's interesting. The four freedoms, why open source is Christian, yes. Just like it isn't popular to say that open source is feminist, don't worry.
I've heard of
Yeah, absolutely. It is changing. Absolutely, I agree with you. Yeah. 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 I mean, when we started out, we were like one of the only girls' groups, but nowadays there's Ubuntu women, Fedora women, KDE women, Postgres women. You know, it's. So. It's true. It's great. And why not? Hey? I mean. Anyways, yeah. Yes.
I said like two things which are kind of counter each other. There's research into the differences between the way that different people based on particular like aspects of that, like the genetic heritage and gender, is like hard to work around, you know, like society. I mean, sometimes you can create a test and then run the test and, you know, the fact is that the results go a certain way, and there, it's a fact. I mean, there's a test, random test, that's how it is. And like, so it's very hard for people to, it's very hard for society to deal with those types of things, because, you know, we don't want to discriminate against people. But yet there are differences between people, and based on any number of things. You know, any number of different ways of things. And it does seem that certain types of diseases or traits attract the program, affect males more than they do females, and it works on both sides. So men are more likely to be on the extreme, both better and worse.
No, sure. Absolutely, I also agree. There are differences, and I mean, we really shouldn't try and level everything. And, yeah. What you guys are developing? What I wanted to add to what you were saying about there are differences, and you know, men and women are definitely different in a number of ways, and it's not so much as trying to deny that or to straighten it out. It's more like levels of appreciation should be perhaps a little more imbalanced. That you know, let's say you agree on a certain difference, that you'll have more women in one sector and more men in the sector. That at least they should be appreciated in the same way. And the reason why I say this is, but what struck me a few months ago is that a guy leaving school in Holland and going to study some kind of tech degree, not even at university level, hey, at I don't know what it's called in South Africa, polytechnic level, and they'll get offered like a laptop, a driver's license course, and extra courses to study, etc. So they'll really get offered just as a massive package, and they'll get paid to do their work experience slots because there's a shortage of them, you know, etc., etc. And the girls that want to actually go and study like nursing, for example, they don't get any like financial perks to study, you know, and their work experience slots at the hospital and whatever, they have to do for free. You know what I mean? So that's just that It just bugs me so much. It's just those levels of appreciation are out of balance. So that's, yeah.
That's also got a lot to do with market forces. Whether they're
sure, it is. Well, there's a need for healthcare workers. So that doesn't make sense to me, because there is a real need for healthcare workers in Holland. So, yes. Sorry? Yeah, perhaps that's true. We should privatize health. No, no, no.
I think I would like agree with what you said about how there are definitely differences between people, but can't put everyone in the same box. I don't know if the XKC cartoon, the girls suck at maths one. You're with a guy and he tries to do something comfortable, you suck at math, and then the girl does it, she can't do it. Girls something like that. Yeah. It's a bit of everything for sure. Okay, then I don't know. You know, perhaps we can carry on with this just now at supper. But there's one thing I'd really like to ask you guys, because the thing that I've always been bugged about when I come to South Africa is the lack of broadband. I put it on the last question. Do any of you think that it's a problem or not? Or I mean, because I feel it's a problem, but that's just because I can't be online 24 hours a day. I just got to tell you, like when I was here 7 years ago, I was in this internet cafe and it was slow, slow, slow. So I asked the guys, you know, what kind of line do you have? And they said, yeah, two ISDN lines, they're bridged. And I thought, wow, no ways. No, now they can, now everyone can get ADSL. You know, it's now like in Scarborough, apparently they don't get the 4 megabit modules, but they can get up to 512 or whatever. But it's still not like... And, you know, it's not like there's glass fiber everywhere or there's wireless everywhere like there is in Holland. And I'm just, like, maybe we have too much and we use it for all the wrong reasons. It means we're twittering all day and blogging all day and it's just, shopping all day, you know, when we could be using our broadband a lot more efficiently. Because I think what happens here is because there's perhaps not so much, people just use it for what it needs to get used for. But I don't know, I was just curious to if any of you worry about this. Or, I mean, I know that the glass fiber is on its way down. It's supposed to be halfway on the west coast of Africa and halfway on the east coast of Africa and slowly making its way. It was supposed to be Cape Town by the beginning of 2010, and now it's only going to be at the end of 2010, so that's too bad.
But not connected to Europe or the... No, I don't think so. That's through SAS. But that... Are you sure? Okay. Well, then I don't understand it. I thought it... Because there was an article in the August saying that this... That there was, like, infighting in the companies and... Oh, there's two more coming. Oh, okay. Okay, okay. Oh, good. Good to hear. Okay, cool. Okay, then... It's not... Okay, okay.
I think one of the big discriminators there is just the financial ability to afford the...
Okay.
Poor people in South Africa have got nothing.
Yeah.
They don't,
yeah, no, sure.
They don't even appear on the bandwidth graph. The rich, it doesn't make much difference whether you're here or in wherever.
Sure.
How much
is
our cash in Euro?
I guess it's about the same as here, actually. But I heard, but you have to correct me here, I stand corrected, that if you wanted to get a 4 megabit line here, you pay, what, 500 rand a month?
Okay, let's not talk about that.
Okay. Okay, but that's the max that people can apply for here through an ISP, isn't it? No, okay, sure. But I'm trying to compare it with the 4 megabit accounts, if you were to apply for 4 megabit, it would also be about that. It would also be about 40 euros. Yes, they don't use the idea of capping, it doesn't exist.
Okay. This is what we want to know.
Yeah. You'll never get the speed they're offering you. Sure, that's the same as here. But you can download whatever you want to. I mean, until.
Is that South Africa is a smaller country, because to pay Europe to get stuff, it's about peering at the country level. Right? South Africa has to pay to get it, okay? Whereas Europe doesn't pay to get
the
it.
States. Right? Yeah, okay, sure.
And there's a minority of people can afford to pay for it as well.
Especially when you know that you're training
with. Sorry, what?
You've got a day for you, you're training with the
way. No, sure. No. I'm not. I find my way around. No, that's not a problem. I'm just thinking of the greater implication of it. You know, why? What the effects are on society as a whole? Like, if you were to have a lot faster and a lot more free kind of network, would it mean that the general population would? Because, like, for example, I don't just download an ISO to try out some new Linux distribution here. Whereas in Holland, I would do that. You know, so you don't try out as much stuff. I don't know. It's those little kind of things that. Seem to keep me back. Sorry?
If it's not ubiquitous internet and people get internet in order to do something, like for a purpose,
yes.
Instead of just
yes.
doing,
yeah.
Which they might do.
5 years ago, before any Star Wars, why he deployed the ground safety task, he wasn't part of that. I mean, most people who weren't any Star Wars can't do like their professional jobs can get it for 5 years a month.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yes, okay, yeah. So downloads take a long time, but I don't think. Look, I personally felt I was being severely limited 5 years ago. But today, I mean, I have more
okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Just the reason the prices are high aren't just because of connectivity difficulties. It's, a lot of it is artificial scarcity. Telkom, which is the one, almost the one only telecom here, used to have as its big cash cow leased lines, and when ADSL came around, they didn't want ADSLs to compete with leased lines, which was priced very high. The features didn't match, etc. It's slowly coming up to match with Europe, but still the speeds are awful and you're capped. And yes, I feel horribly limited to buy it. And once you've been in South Africa for a few years, not too bad, then you go to Europe for a week and it's insane. You can't believe what you're missing.
It's
horrific.
I find it very difficult to picture in South Africa a free internet access terminal like the we have in some places in India, where anybody can go and walk up to the wall and there's a browser and you can browse.
You couldn't do that here. It costs too much.
But that's just because there's less, I think, yeah.
No, I would really like to run an open network at my house. I'd like to offer service to the neighbors, maybe slightly limited, but...
Skyrope.
I just can't do it for cost purposes.
Yeah.
Because if I did it, they would use it because they're paying 80 rand a gig.
Yeah, but that's Skyrove, perhaps, for you. I don't know. I don't know if you... Skyrove is this... Yeah, of course you know it.
What?
You know Hank, yeah.
You discovered it. She needs three or four names.
All of this is an area where you can get any sort of...
No, I know, because Scarborough telephone thingies haven't been upgraded to the 4 megabit possibilities yet. So, and then you go anywhere else, exactly. Do you know what David told me? This is a nice anecdote. David said, because Scarborough is such a tight-knit community, you know, as soon as they heard that ADSL was coming, everybody signed the petition, pressured Telkom, and Telkom placed this 512 module. Then only 4 families subscribed to an ADSL. They were so pissed off, and that's why Scarborough doesn't have 4 megabit now.
But they'll go up on the tops of mountains and mountain masts. And that's how much the demand is. You even get the farmers saying, is there any way you can just be a little bit quicker? They're actually hamstrung by Telkom because they can only deal with Telkom.
Telkom.
And I mean, I've been waiting 2 months to get a simple telephone line.
And the cop is there probably, hey?
No.
Yeah.
On the alternative thing, technology like WiMAX, I think something is a prime candidate, especially for our lack of infrastructure.
Yeah.
Something like WiMAX. But between Telkom and Neotel, like, squatting on the spectrum, they're not using what they have.
Yeah.
And Zekasa not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
Dragging their heels, of course, like.
They're
just not doing anything about
it.
Yeah, exactly. It's just.
Yeah.
No one is doing anything about the regulation body who's supposed to be doing something about it. Has such basic interest in time.
Yeah.
You know, it's just we're lagging behind.
My dad's
at the very end, he's been on the WiMAX course and he's installing gigabits. So he's, you know, my dad's the guy out there in the field actually installing gigabits in the rural areas for WiMAX provide phone lines. With a single, you know, plug in WiMAX module will provide 164,000.
So it's coming.
Basically, as part of like various agreements, Telkom is supposed to. Basically, it's not only that. Okay, there are two types of problems. There's a regulatory problem, and then there's the like people who have been regulated problem, and they're supposed to roll out services at a particular rate to particular types of areas that being classified, and they just don't, which is fine, right? But the regulators then say, okay, well, we have these concept of the people who can provide services to these other service areas. And they then say, okay, well, we can have X number of these people, you know, available, you know, like you have to register and go through some process to be able to do this thing. And then they give the licenses out to these people who don't actually do anything. You know, they don't do enough. The regulators are preventing people from being able to provide these services into these other service areas. Kind of, like silly. So up until 2 years ago, it basically was impossible to get any selling in Square Channel. There was no other legal way to get any connectivity in
that area. How are we for time? When do we normally stop?
Whenever we decide we're hungry.
The reason
I have some inside information because I do work for some, well, I have worked for 3.5 years in Chicago. The inside information is basically this: how come this organization is quite dysfunctional? So actually there's a genuine interest in providing a better service, but the problem is that there's so many departments in Telkom that are competing against each other, just trying to protect their space, that are, they're just trying to save face and so on, that actually as an organization it's become too complicated. It's like a big huge board of code that's just going like complete spaghetti. And it's so bureaucratic and so many levels and layers of interconnections that it's impossible to get anything done. So as an organization, it doesn't function properly. And that's historical, actually. And as a result, and because its IT systems are so complicated and so old, it's wasting an enormous amount of money trying to revamp itself and reinvent itself and actually getting nowhere. And as a last-ditch effort, actually, the board of directors of Telkom has decided they're going to outsource the entire Telkom. They're going to retrench 19,000 of their 20,000 employees, and they're going to outsource all their IT and almost everything about the company, and that's going to happen next month.
To who? Who are they going to outsource it to? Do you know?
They haven't chosen who the contractors are going to be, but I mean, the large, the IBMs and HPs and all these other places are going to be bidding for that contract. All these companies, what's probably going to happen is the companies are going to get into Telkom, try and actually fulfill the contract of reinventing Telkom, fail miserably, and service will get even worse.
Well, there's so lots of kids, so that's cool.
Brace yourself for that. I think, from being in there, I think it's nothing more than the fact that the organization is too complex, too dysfunctional, and too many people are just trying to protect their territory.
But it needs to be broken up then by the government. The Americans did this specific about with Bell Labs.
And actually,
the UK did with
Possibly.
But that could take
years. Possibly, but I quite honestly, I'm working in this now to make work, because I've tried in little ways to really, for the last few years, to really try and help, and it's basically you're fighting against thunder.
This is how we make it.
I second that. Telkom has, well, that says Telkom has an entire department devoted to prevent other people from doing their jobs. They'll buy new equipment that costs millions of rands and store it, have it designed, but this other department is supposed to do quality control. It says that you can't put any load on it until it's passed this
test. Yeah.
And then that takes a year and a half. It exhausts half its value, and it's
like
the way that it starts down the way. Traffic on it.
Well,
okay.
Yeah,
we
mention
that topic all the
time.
Every
cloud.
There's lots of other countries that have that problem too.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to.
No. Right.
It's actually a good thing that broadband is about, just measure scarcity, and scarcity is a piece of that.